Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. Before we get into the news of today, I just want to once again advertise the 46th Hoengli Memorial Lecture that is being hosted by the Institute of Race Relations. It's going to be held this Thursday, the 6th of November. It's 120 Rand per person tickets. It's at 5:30 for 6 in Parktown. And there will be some snacks and finger foods served. The talk is by Professor Hussein Solomon, and the title is Embracing Machiavelli to Achieving a Liberal Future. So if you're interested in that, if you want to be part of that discussion, please do check out the link, which should be in the YouTube comments section if you are watching on YouTube. Okay, thank you very much. Let's get into the news of today. The first thing we're going to be talking a little bit about is this absolutely crazy story from, I think, the journalist in Daily Maverick was Anna Cox, about the chaos. Yet another story about the mismanagement of the city of Johannesburg. And this is, the title is Property Chaos as Syndicates Raid Abandoned City of Joburg Plan Archives. Now, basically, the story here is that if you remember... I mean, there have been so many dramas about what's going on in Joburg's mismanagement. But the center of the administration for the city of Johannesburg, Metro Center in Bromfontein, was declared unsafe in 2023 after a fire there. Well, it's still unsafe. The building is just kind of sitting there rotting while the city kind of works out what to do with it. You've got your staff scattered all over the city trying to work from home. But the upshot of this is that the vast repository of building plans that the city has on file, many of which date back, you know, decades, is not able to be accessed. It is in a basement that has been deemed not safe for people to enter at regular intervals. So, as the story points out, developers can't build, homeowners can't sell, and banks are refusing bonds, all because the city of Johannesburg can't find its own building plans. The city has since 2021 added various things to a online database in terms of building plans. So there are some plans available, but only for buildings that have had their plans uploaded to the system since 2021, which is not that many of them. That's the construction permit management system. For everyone else, good luck, because they don't have access to these building plans. And so if you want to legally build things and get your plans approved by the city, if you want to make changes or build like a new part of your house or create a new development or, you know, even get a bank loan, things get a little bit more difficult. So the journalist Anna Cox went to the planning department in Newtown to see if she could get a hold of the plan. She planned to do turn a lounge window into a sliding door, a 15,000 Rand job. Now, I must say, I commend her for even going to the planning department for this, because I think the vast majority of landowners would just ignore the requirement to submit plans for this. But anyway, she gets there, there's no queue, and the receptionist just points to a sign which says, email this person with and a WhatsApp number, and 3 to 5 days is the response from this person. So she follows up the next week, can I get my plans? And please, they say no. More than a month later, she's still waiting for her plans with no sign that they're going to be coming anytime soon. There is an option to get around all of this. She wants to get planning approval. She could simply have a qualified person redraw the building plans to describe the building accurately so that she can submit those for approval. But, of course, that's expensive. So right now, this means that the only places that are getting approval to do building and changes and things legally are places that are either paying the large costs to have plans entirely redrawn from scratch, or are paying syndicates to go in to these to the place where all of these files are sitting in this basement of the Johannesburg Metro Center, and retrieving the plans and selling them. This is despite security guards and armed patrols constantly patrolling the building. So, Michael, you know, just kind of chaos, dysfunction, disorder. There's this sort of great quote here about the online system of the plans, which has been up since 2021, with the city saying that they lost control of it for a while because they forgot to renew a contract with the service provider. I mean, you have the fact that they say, well, you know, even though it's been 2 years, we still aren't able to actually take the documents out of this basement, and we haven't found an alternative location. What's your thoughts on all this?
Lots of different things. I mean, as somebody who's very interested in history, and you can probably tell from the books behind me, I like to dwell in the record of things past and various points of view about it. One of the things that immediately struck me was Johannesburg Heritage Foundation warning in the story. Anna Cox took the trouble to go to them, warned that the archives in this building include irreplaceable records dating back to the city's founding, and that the Heritage Foundation said the plans are a priceless civic resource. So that's just one aspect. The everyday hassle is the other. And I suppose the thing that immediately strikes me, partly having been a journalist all my life, is how important this kind of journalism is, and really a shout out to Anna Cox in this case. I thought of, you know, a very comprehensive, detailed look at a problem. She manages to use her own particular experience. You described that, wanting to convert a lounge window into a sliding door, 15,000 rand job. It would likely cost her, there are figures in the story, so much more if she is going to have the plans.
Double, I think, was the figure she gave.
Exactly. I like also the fact that the actual name of the official, Patrick Koloko, and his email address are both given in the story. This is all a contribution to, you know, public accountability. These are officials. We pay them. They've got to do a job. She records her engagement with this guy. He doesn't seem unreasonable or rude, or doesn't seem to have anything wrong with him, but the whole system is problematic. And I think what this kind of journalism is doing is bringing us, to the point where we face truthfully what our real problems are. And it sets it out very, very clearly. It's a lot of detail. There's a little list here, a little box of the costs of replacing missing plans, and it's quite a staggering, you know, how much ordinary property owners who want to do some change to their homes or want to sell, or whatever the case may be, wherever you need to refer to your plans, these are the hundreds of thousands sometimes that you might have to pay out to get that. And then right at the bottom of the story, I just want to mention this, which I thought was also very, very significant. It's a bit of a punt for the Daily Maverick's approach to journalism, but there it is. I think it's worth mentioning. Ferial Haffergy is the Johannesburg bureau editor, and she begins by saying, "The city of Johannesburg now has hundreds more spin doctors and media people doing its PR and creating social media than there are independent journalists reporting the city in the entire media ecosystem." And we all know that Johannesburg, landmark city, in a sense, of South Africa. If you ask people abroad, maybe that were Cape Town, they'll know it's a kind of tourism center. But Johannesburg is the economic heart of the South African economy. It's this huge city. We know it's so much bigger than Cape Town. It's so much more exciting because you've got all these problems. It's so much more important because you've got all that money and all those talents coming together to generate economic activity and ideas and all the rest of it. And yet it's in a terrible, terrible state. So Johannesburg is really a critical symbol of the South African problem. It's politically, you know, now highly contested. This is a very good thing. But one of the key things we need to be able to do to begin to address Johannesburg and therefore the rest of South Africa, it kind of follows, is to face what exactly is wrong. And here is a very, very good story, I think, that gives us the nitty-gritty, what's the cliche term, the granular detail, to my old-fashioned way of thinking, the nitty-gritty of what's actually happening, how things work, how things are not working. I think, you know, quite shocking on the one hand, but thank heavens there's an Anna Cox out there writing this kind of story. I think it really is much more important than it might at first glance seem.
Yeah, well, you know, what are the consequences to ordinary people? I mean, you could have some sort of socialist-y type person looking at the story and saying, oh, the poor capitalist property developers and the middle class is not able to put in a pool in their house. Oh, woe is them. But actually, the consequences of this are quite serious. Firstly, anything needs to be built, right? So, you know, you want to get new factory, new offices, new whatever for economic stuff. This is going to cause problems for you. You want to, build a new housing development, which would ultimately bring down housing costs or allow people to live closer to where they work to reduce traffic congestion. Like the entire sort of, this is actually an extremely important part of life. It's basically the entire design of your city, economic growth, all these things effectively can't be done legally. That's kind of the sort of result here, is that the only people who can afford to do this are people with lots of cash to throw around or people who are very desperate. But that doesn't mean that things aren't going to be built. Things are going to be built. This is South Africa. We don't always, you know, as the kids might say, vibe with these rules. Wow. And so a lot of people are going to just go ahead and build things. And sometimes that's going to be fine. But very often that's going to mean you're going to have, you know, maybe buildings that are not being taxed correctly, buildings that fall down because they're not built to a certain standard, buildings that cause problems for their neighbors and the neighbors weren't able to have some sort of input on this. You're going to have all these sort of knock-on effects. Now, I'm not a huge fan of building regulation, as I've said over and over again, but I do think that there are some rules in the system that should probably be adhered to. And at the moment, what we've done is we've created a system where it's very expensive or impossible for people who want to follow the rules to do it. And the people who are going to ignore the rules, well, you know, there's a bribe you can pay. There's the fact that there aren't that many inspectors. And so you can just get around the enforcement that way. And so the only things that are going to be built are things built by cowboys or things built by people who don't give a damn or people trying to make a quick buck, exactly the kind of things that you produce these regulations to prevent in the first place. So this is one of those things that I think is not super sexy in terms of campaigning. But if a new government comes in Joburg, this is something that really needs attention. The city of Johannesburg needs to be able to build things. And, you know, if you can't at least get, you'd like the plans need to be out of that basement. They should be out of there a week from now. I don't believe that the city has made any real effort if after 2 years they haven't been able to find a new place. I don't know, Michael, do you have any extra thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. The impression one gets is fundamentally an administration that isn't really feeling the heat. It's not feeling the pressure to act as quickly as it should. And that's really what is at the heart of the problem. It is fundamentally a political problem. It's politicians doing the hard, unsexy, routine work to get things working properly. There are no quick ways of doing it, but somebody has to start. Somebody has to make that effort. We've spoken before about the very popular view that, you know, politicians are all just a waste of time and they're just, you know, consuming public funds and doing very little. But serious politicians actually are the people we depend on doing all these things, making sure that things work, making sure that regulations can be amended or are applied. It's one or the other. And if you have an effective politician, that's what you get. You get a response to a public issue, people saying, well, you know, this regulation was drafted in 1932. We don't need it anymore. Can we adjust it? You can only do that if you've got a bunch of serious politicians sitting around saying exactly that we need to think seriously about this. But in the first instance is you need to have that understanding of a kind of rules-based system, not unreasonable, but it works. It's got to work. And what you know what we see in this case is stuff that just is not working.
There's just a simple accountability thing here. Get the documents moved out of the unsafe building so that people can access them properly.
Exactly.
Step one. Like, there's all these other problems, but just start there. That's a great, as they say, what's the cliche? Low-hanging fruit, easy wins, win-win solutions. There you go. There's one right there. If it takes you 2 years to do it, then what the hell are you even doing?
Yeah. Exactly right. Wow. Yeah.
All right. Let's go on to our next story. This is an interesting story because I think it's a little bit actually like the first one, and that it sort of makes me have complicated feelings. So, as we know from lots of media reporting over the past while, South Africa's steel industry is not in a great place. ArcelorMittal closing down stuff. Just people generally seem to be losing jobs. Just stuff not going well. However, on the outskirts of Joburg in Ekurhuleni, in Nigel, a new steel mill is about to fire up its finances. The Chung Fung Metal Facility, which has been backed by Chinese investors, is supposed to be capable of producing 600,000 tons of long steel a year and is set to begin operations maybe this week or maybe even next week. But when you start to look into this company, as the media reporting here does, this seems like really good news, right? New steel factory, we're going to be producing stuff. This is what everyone wants. Things look a little bit less fun when you start to look in. There's remarkably few public details about this, and the owners themselves were not willing to answer questions, or at least didn't respond to questions from the media on this one. And they also happen to be owned by a company called Central Bridge Construction, who has some of the same owners, which is a company that has run afoul of labor inspectors before, who say that it has not complied with the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and that people sleeping on the sites of its construction were living in, quote, appalling conditions. And crucially, and I think this is the really kind of damning one that should, let's just say the smoke, even if there isn't necessarily a fire, we should pay attention to this. The Central Bridge Construction Company has been named in an investigation by News 24 earlier this year, where they were contracted to upgrade a city power substation for 8.6 million rand, and the price of that ballooned to 100 million rand. The company denies any knowledge of price inflation or the initial 8.6 million rand quote, and that it was all above board. So, some kind of weird dodginess about this whole thing. We don't really know. And then also there's been the usual thing that you see often in South Africa when there's any new development is local people protesting and saying they want jobs at the facility, which apparently I thought this didn't reflect well on the community the way it was phrased here. Just months ago, hundreds of unemployed Nigel youth marched to the Chung Fung site to demand jobs for locals. The protesters accused the company of favoring skilled workers and those from outside the community. Well, yes. I mean, do you really expect them not to favor skilled workers? But anyway, so this is new development, but Michael, I get a little bit of a feeling this feels a little bit like it might be a kind of deal with the devil type of scenario. Is this better than nothing? Are some people going to get some money? Is there going to be economic investment, good stuff? Yeah, I'm sure there will be. It's very difficult to do anything like this without positive things coming off of it. But you also get the feeling like there might be, maybe there have been that things weren't 100% done correctly, that things weren't 100% above board. And the end result of all this is going to be that it's not going to provide the same value that it could have if all the rules were followed. I don't know. What do you make of this? I think this is indicative of a system where the rules are, shall we say, flexible, if you know the right people, but still are strong enough to discourage kind of players who want to play by the rules. I don't know. What do you make of the story?
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of worrying. Funny enough, I was writing in Business Day this morning about the role of wealth, the very important role of wealth in society, and that it is a very powerful lodestar for people who aren't wealthy and who kind of believe in the idea of maybe becoming wealthy or just being successful. And I quote the very noted liberal commentator Adrian Wooldridge, who wrote about 2 years ago, I think, in Bloomberg. Column about the never-ending battle that rages within the soul of capitalism, as he put it, between the liberal values that ensure its success in the long run, which he listed as competition, meritocracy, and individualism, and the pursuit of short-term advantage, which he listed as controlling markets, seducing governments, and debasing culture. And he made the very important point that liberalism was impossible without capitalism. Liberalism, you can take as a kind of free society, is not possible without capitalism. You can certainly have, on the other hand, capitalism without liberalism. And I think this is obviously our worry as the IRR, but it ought to be a kind of national worry is that you can have economic activity running to hundreds of billions of rands. But if the underpinning structure, the rationale, the justifications, the process by which things are approved and are funded and so on, are not grounded in openness and in all the really good things that enable capitalism to work for people, then you're likely exposing yourself to risk. It's difficult to say. One doesn't want to prejudge the case here. 2.5 billion steel mills, that's quite a significant thing. But you see the Ekurhuleni spokesperson's really Dlamini saying that despite the challenges faced by SA's steel sector, the significance of the sector in driving and deriving economic activity can't be downplayed or undermined. And so he's speaking up for an investment which it has all these questions about it, and it is a worry that growth or economic activity at any cost is not necessarily going to be a benefit in the long run if it
Right.
doesn't meet
So
all these key criteria.
if I can restate this a different way, what you don't want is a system of crony capitalism. And crony capitalism on the surface looks a lot like capitalism in that you have, kind of companies developing things in the private sector, deriving wealth and that. But what crony capitalism does is it's a system whereby the most crucial aspect in many ways of capitalism, competition, it doesn't exist properly. Because rather than he who has the best, service winning the market, the person who wins the market is he who can get regulators and politicians on their side. And I think when you see something like this, where there's these sort of ties to government and the sort of clouds and stuff around it, I mean, obviously, as you say, we don't know for sure. There needs to be a full investigation to actually find out whether there's anything wrong here. It may not be, but it makes one think about the possibility that you can have developments like this that are driven by who you know, and that is not going to actually uplift your economy that much. You may see some benefit, right? There may be some people get jobs and stuff from this, but what it's going to do is it's going to crowd out other alternatives, and you're also going to have negative externalities that don't have proper ability to enforce things. If this is dodgy, and let's say you have a factory that dumps poisonous stuff into the water in a system of crony capitalism, because it's tied and connected to politicians and government and law enforcement and all that things, you can't hold that company accountable because, there's political protection being run for them. Whereas if it's in a free market, and someone damages your rights, you can hold them accountable. You can sue them. You can do that kind of thing. And so that's why this kind of stuff is probably better than nothing for sure, but it's also not great. I don't know. I'm being a bit long-winded here, but Michael, do you get my point?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And there was somewhere in the story a reference to the fact that even locals weren't aware of this, the sheer scale of this thing. It just suddenly appeared on the scene, and trucks began arriving, and machinery was building stuff and so on. That in itself tells you something. The very final lines of the story, also vaguely unsettling, I have to say, where you referred to the sort of unemployed Nigel youth marching on the Chung Fung site to demand jobs for locals, and then it says there has been some progress on this front, according to community representative and activist Jerome van Grienen. Chung Fung Metal has begun to engage with the community and has come to the table with some tangible opportunities for local residents and businesses. So, this is very appealing. This is great news, but is it really great news? Do we really know how dependable this is? And for all the reasons that you spelled out, Nicholas, exactly right.
Yeah, look, I mean, I hope my suspicion is completely ill-founded and it's based on, this sort of reporting that clearly is not suspect something about what's going on here. And I hope that everything is fine and above board and everyone's going to get jobs from this. But I do fear sometimes that one can very easily slip into the problems of crony capitalism. It's a similar concern I have with, for example, the privatization of the rail infrastructure and stuff. If there's an open, proper bidding process where, whoever wants to run the railway, who can do it best and give, as our colleagues have, been stressing, the best value for money. And if they win the contract, that's good, but it's also a way of, hiding out the handing out of patronage to politically connected people. You say, oh no, we're privatizing it, but actually it's just going to, your friend who happens to have just started a rail company. Anyway, we shall watch that kind of stuff with interest. I suspect if some of the concerns being raised here are real, then I suspect the story will probably in the next couple of years come back up into the news at some point. Let's go on to our last story. This is about Stats SA. Stats SA is facing real shortages in cash. It's had all sorts of problems with the census, the most recent census that was done, which had lots of issues and has been rejected as it's credible by some. And then the fact that you have Stats SA having these huge vacancy rates and the shrinking operational budget. In 2024, 2025 financial year, they have 700 vacancies but could only advertise for seven of those positions because they just didn't have money to fill the rest. Michael, Stats SA is one of those interesting organizations. It's been very useful for South Africa for a very long time. Us at the IRR have relied on it and its data to make judgments about the country. It's important for planning. It's important for analysis. Basically, it's one of the most important things for understanding how well South Africa works. And it's one of the things that sets us apart in a lot of ways from other African countries is we might give it a much better scale of the problems here, because partly of the work done by Stats SA. So not great that it's being underfunded. What's your take on this one?
Yes, I agree with that absolutely. I think you have, for the most part, people who are not politically aligned within Stats SA. They're experts, scientists who are interested in accuracy and results and the credibility of the work they do. We have certainly, as you say, over the years, over the decades, relied on their information. It's absolutely critical to understanding the kind of society we are and the kind of society that we are becoming every day, because it is always changing. This is a point we were chatting about earlier, is the dynamism of our society. I wouldn't want to compare it with any other, but we are certainly a dynamic society where things don't stay the same. There tends to be a sort of cynical view that nothing changes, that everything is preordained, and you know, we can predict the future because of how people are. It isn't so at all. We are a changing society. Just the very last story is in a sense one element of that. We need to understand, you know, the nature of the investment coming into the country and from where. And the only people who can really tell us this sort of stuff are the statisticians at Stats SA. And if you go onto their website and you look at, you know, any given topic, you will find pretty unvarnished, bald assessments of everything from jobs to economic growth to trust in the least, and so on. It's all there, and it is very, very important. So I think all eyes should be on Enoch Godongwana's medium-term budget policy statement. It says here that later this month he's going to be making the statement and addressing the cash crunch at Stats SA. This is something that really does deserve, you know, a great deal of attention. It needs a solution, and we can't afford really to end up flying in the dark and have no idea of, you know, what we're dealing with, who our population is, what they're thinking, where they're going, where they're working, whether they're not working, and so on. So I think very, very important. Yeah.
No, it's, you know, it's difficult to argue for the funding of something like Stats SA when every single part of government is crying out for money. You know, I think that this is an area where lack of funding is probably not going to be immediately visible, but the long-term consequences might actually be quite severe. And it's, you know, in the grander scheme of things, it's not actually that much cash. But anyway. These are all the consequences of years of financial mismanagement and overspending, right? Is that, you know, we start to see problems like this. This is why you spend within your means when you're a government, because otherwise you find yourself running blind. All right. With that, let's call it to a close. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a great day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.